All right, we're starting here on the bottom of Chavav and Bet, about five lines from the bottom. The Gemara here quotes the Mishnah. It's interesting, there's actually a question about the Girsa and the Mishnah, as well as for the understanding of the Mishnah, which is here. It says, Ein Mavrim, Ela al Mitot Zkufot. One possibility of the Girsa is that we only do it on Mitot Zkufot. And then one is, Ein Mavrim al Mitot Zkufot. That we don't do Havara on Mitot Zkufot. There is a Machloket in the Mishnah itself as to whether it's speaking about Chol HaMoed, because the context of the Mishnah is Chol HaMoed. So is this din said with regards to Chol HaMoed? We know that with regards to Chol HaMoed that there is a Sudat Havra'ah, even though there is no Avilut. And so then the Mishnah is saying is that we only do that on Mitot Zkufot, meaning because it's Chol HaMoed and there's no Avilut and there is a Sudat Havra'ah, it's only done on Mitot Zkufot, which is the beds that do not have Kfiata Mita. So that's one possibility of reading the Mishnah. That's where the Raivud and others read the Mishnah. Most of the Rishonim read the Mishnah, like Rashi did when we saw it, referring to the Menachamim. It's talking about all year long, not particularly about Chol HaMoed, that when the Menachamim, those that come to comfort the mourner, bring the Sudat Havra'ah, they don't sit on the ground or in the Kfiata Mita like him. Rather, they sit up on a bed. They sit up on a normal level chair or bed where they're going to eat, whereas the Avel is down on the Mita Kfuya. So those are the two ways to read the Mishnah. Now we're going to have a statement or Braita in the Gemara that somewhat qualifies this, which is Tan Rabbanan. Haloich lebeit ha'avel, im haya libo gasbo. You go to a beit ha'avel, and libo gasbo is a terminology that's used other places in the Gemara and the Mishnah with regards to familiarity. It means that people who are comfortable with each other, yavruhu al mitot kfuyot, then you do it on a mitah kfuya, v'im lav, and if not, yavruhu al mitot zkufot, then you should do it on mitot zkufot. Again, here you have quasi-dangling modifier. It's not clear who's the subject of the statement here. When we say, you will do it on mitot zkufot, or do it on mitot kfuyot, is that speaking about the avel, or is that speaking about the menachamim? It's not clear from the braita. The question about how to explain this will also have implications on, again, the next part of the Gemara. The most likely explanation is that it's referencing the menachamim again. And the way to explain it is that if the menachem comes along, and he brings the Sudat Havra'ah, or he's in front of the Avel. If it's someone who is comfortable with the Avel, and will not take offense to be putting on the floor, or being on the Kfiyat HaMita with the Avel, then he can go ahead and do that. I mean, that's the familiarity aspect of it. Someone who you're close with. If it's not someone who you're close with, then the Menachamim should be up on the Mitot Zgufot, because it's not proper. Would they feel offended by the fact that you're asking them to be on the floor? That's one way to read it. The Muke Yosef here on the Rif brings another possibility, is that it refers to an Ayin Hara or Siman Ra, that the Menachamim are coming if they feel comfortable with the Avel and they don't take offense to the fact that you on a Mitak Fuya, they don't see that as being a Siman Ra, then they can do that. But if they see that as a Siman Ra, oh, you're putting me on a Mitak Fuya as if you're wishing that I'm an Avel, and they see it as a Siman Ra, then you do it on a Mita Skufa. That's another possibility. Again, the last possibility is that it references the Avel himself. That the familiarity aspect has to do with the Avel. If the Avel is comfortable with the individual, and therefore there can be an unevenness, which again, in a hierarchical society, to have people on different levels is not considered to be so appropriate. So here, if you're very comfortable with the individual, then he sits up on the Mitak Skufa, and the Avel remains on the Mitak Fuya. On the other hand, if you're not comfortable, it's someone that you're not so familiar with, then the Avel also gets up on a Mitas Kufa to be on parity with the Menachamim. So again, those are three different ways to read what is said here. Two of them refer to the Menachamim, who are coming to be Menachem, the Avel. We say to them, either sit up or sit down, whether it's because of Ayin Hara or their inauspicious type of behavior, or because of their comfort level, whether they would take offense to being sat down or up. That's the first two ways. The other way is that it's referring to the Avel himself, and again, giving comfort to the Menachamim. Rava Itra Be Milto. So Rava had an Avelut, and we've seen this term before. Something bad happened to me that he had an Avelut. Aligabe Abba Bar Marta, Abba Bar Myume. So Abba Bar Marta, who's also known as Abba Bar Myume, entered to be Menachemim. Rava Zokif. Rava was Zokif, the Mitai sat it up. Abba Bar Marta Kofi, put it down. So now, the question again, depending on how you read the previous statement, we're also relevant here, which is, did Rava fix his own bed and sit his own bed up? Or did he sit up the bed of Abba Marta who's coming to visit? One of those two. Abba Marta, on the other hand, flipped it over and put it down. So now, Amar, Kama Leit Be'idato Lahai Tzurmin B'Rabbonon. This young Tzurmin B'Rabbonon doesn't really know what he's doing. He really doesn't understand. He's not reading the situation correctly. So what Rava was suggesting is, Rava was saying that we're not so close. Since we're not so close, either Rava set up his bed, or he set up the bed of Abba Marta. Abba Marta comes in, thinks that they're the best buddies, and that we're close friends, and he flips the bed over, and he didn't take the cue from Rava, who had lifted the bed up. So that's what he's saying, that he's misunderstanding the social context, and here he is, his young Talmud Chacham, is not acting appropriately. He should have taken the cue from Rava, and instead he assumes that they're close friends, or that they're closer than they really are. All right, Tana Rabbanan. Person is traveling from place to place, if he can reduce the amount of business that he's involved with, Rashi says, that he's a merchant that moves back and forth, travels to do business. If it's impossible for him to do this, he should join in, and he has partners here. He should lean on the partners heavily, not do it all himself. What this is speaking about is somewhat strange, because we already had this in the Gemara, we already had a problem with this back on Daf Chof Bet, which is, the Gemara originally said that an Avel is Asur b'Melacha for the Shiva Yamim. For the 7 days, an Avel doesn't do Melacha. That's from the Pasuk in Amos that says, V'fachte et chagechem le'evil, that I'm going to change your chag to evil. We say, Machag Shiva. Also, evil is 7 days, meaning that there's an Isur Melacha associated with the Avelut for 7 days. Then we had another statement about Dover Aved. That seems to be Dover Aved, or after 3 days, the Avel can do work. So back then we discussed the fact that Tosfot differentiates between Aviv v'Imo, his parents, and a regular Avelut. By a regular Avelut, one shouldn't engage in Melacha, but if they do engage in Melacha, they can't do it for a Dover Aved, or maybe after 3 days they can engage in Melacha. For the first 3 days they shouldn't engage in Melacha. By parents, the din is for all 7 days they should not engage in Melacha whatsoever. So that's what Tosafot says over here. Again, v'nirav dabar dabar aved kamar. First of all, we're definitely talking about a dabar aved. That's what permitting him to do it. And then, number two, he says v'nirav perusho da'achamayir ba'aviv v'imo. Again, the thing with parents. So here you have the two things. You have parents and dabar aved. So you have the dispensation to do malacha for a parent, which is dabar aved. And that's why we're speaking about this here. Versus any other avel who can do malacha if they choose. I mean, if they so choose, they can do malacha. Or they don't do malacha. That's up to them. What the case is exactly is not clear, but it clearly is a double Aved. Tosfot even suggested the case where he already traveled out. He bought the merchandise, and now he's carrying the merchandise. He's stuck with the merchandise. Do we allow him to sell it? He's going to be caught. Meaning that he put out the money, he laid out the money, he bought it. If we don't let him allow him to sell it, he's going to suffer significant losses that he could suffer, or that he's going to be carrying the cost of the merchandise. Do we allow him to sell it? That's maybe a possibility of what's happening here. Or whether he's in a business transaction that is going to cause him a loss if he doesn't engage in it. So again, the optimal solution is to have the partners deal with it, or to lean on the partners or to work with them. Other possibility, Tosafot is talking about someone who's traveling. Someone's on the derech, and he has to prepare, he has to buy food to get ready for the derech. So again, he should not buy tons of food, but if he has partners, have them buy the food, have them do the preparations for the travel, so that he doesn't have to engage in that, he can focus on the avilut. So whatever the exact scenario is, Tosafot limits it here again to Aviv v'Imo, and Dover Aved, that's why we're speaking about there's a dispensation, and that's why he should be Ma'et v'Isko. Clearly back on Chof Bet, where it says, Al-Kol HaMeitim Kulan Ratzah Me'Ma'et V'Isko Ratzah Inu Me'Ma'et, by all Avelim, you have a choice, whether you want to be Ma'et or not be Ma'et in it, and Aviv v'Imo Me'Ma'et, doesn't matter, by parents, there's no question about it. So then the Gemara back on Chof Bet, it said, Avel Gemel Yamim Rishun Masur Me'Malachah. Most of the Rishonim read that as referring to someone who has nothing to eat. That is the only option. That's why for the first 3 days we say no, but after that we give him free rein. Rashbam read that as referring to any Avel. That after the first 3 days, there is permission to engage in Melacha. So I take those three together, three different Gemaras, their Tosfot here is trying to piece them together and say, listen, with regards to someone doesn't have anything, the first 3 days are restricted, after that you can do whatever you need to do. With regards to an Avel for another Karov except his parents, there, you have a choice. You want, you don't. You can decide how you want to engage in your melacha. When it comes to parents, there's a restriction against engaging in melacha. Here's might be the exception, which is dovra oved. That's how Tosafot reconciles the three different gemarot. Right, Tana Rabbanan, meimitai kofim net amitot. When is the point when you're kofed the mita? The Gemara says, mishiatzami petach beito divei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says in the Braita that It starts from the time that you leave the house. Rabbi Shua Omer, Mishatateim HaGolel, only after the burial. The question of the trigger for Avelut, similar type of idea. These are Minhagei Avelut. When do we transition into Minhagei Avelut? Again, that harkens back to the Machloket, the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam says that Avelut only starts after the burial. The Ramban who says that you have a tour of Meito Metulafanav until you reach the burial. So what's that threshold? So Rabbi Elazar says once you've left the house. That's the end of the Aninut period in the house. So therefore, all the beds can be flipped once you've left the house. So by the time you get back, it's done. Now they say, no, after the Kvurot, that when the Avelut descends upon the individual, that's when you do the flipping of the beds. Ma'ase Shemet Rabban Gamliel Azakein, he passed away. Kevin Shiatzami Petach Beito, Amrlehem Rabbi Eliezer, Kafu Mito Techem. He says, go ahead and flip the beds. Meaning that he whispered to them his Shito. Kevin Shinistama Golel. Then after the burial, Amrlehem Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua leans over them and says, Kafu Mito Techem. Flip over the beds. Amrlu, Far Kafinu Alpi Zakein. We already did it based on Rabbi Eliezer. I mean, Rabbi Eliezer got there first because his opinion was to do it earlier. So Rabbi Shua was following his own opinion, but it was, in a sense, too late because Rabbi Eliezer jumped the gun and made sure that they did the Kviyat Amita pi his Shita. Tan Rabbanan, Meimatai Zukfim et Amitot, Be'erev Shabbat. So this is something that happens in every Avelut because every Avelut involves Shabbat. By definition, if you have a 7 days of Avelut, you're going to have a Shabbat that intervenes. And we know before we saw that you can't have Avelut b'Farhesia, you can only have Avelut b'Tzina. So one of the things they're going to do on Erev Shabbat is they're going to flip the beds back over. They're going to reestablish the quote-unquote normalcy in the house. It's also the permission today in our minhag that today that the Avelim also change their clothes and shower for Shabbat. At what point on Erev Shabbat do you move over into quote-unquote Shabbat, the preparations for Shabbat? How close to Shabbat do you have to be in order to stop the minhagei avelut and now begin the preparations for Shabbat? The Gemara says, min amincha lamala. It's from mincha time and onward. Now, mincha lamala, we know we have this question in Arbe Pesachim, in the 10th parak in Pesachim. What does mincha lamala mean? There could be mincha gdola, or could mean mincha ktana. Tosafot himself says he's uncertain as to what it's speaking about here. Generally, I think we try to focus on mincha ktana, the latter half of the day, late in the day on Friday afternoon, before the Avilim get up from, quote-unquote, their Avilut to prepare for Shabbat. But obviously, there's room for a mincha gedola here, based on the Gemara, which says, min amincha lamalo. That's generally our view of Erev Shabbat. Once you cross over Chatzot, midday, noon, on Erev Shabbat, you're already into the area that has the sphere of influence of Shabbat. For instance, you don't say Tachanun on Erev Shabbat at mincha time. That doesn't matter if you daven mincha gedola or mincha ketano. It's Shabbat already is influencing the Erev Shabbat in the afternoon. And so you could argue that it's Mincha Gedola. Again, the practice generally is to wait until later in the day towards Mincha Ktana time. So here they say that's when they flip the beds back over. Again, that's when they stop doing Avelut B'Farhesi and start to prepare for Shabbat. Amar Rabba Varhuna Afu B'Kain Eni Yosheva La'ad Shetechshach. Okay, these are preparations in anticipation of Shabbat, but he himself can't sit on it until nightfall, until it's actually Shabbat. I mean that these are preparations, not that the Avelut is terminated, only things that can't be done on Shabbat. These are anticipation preparations for Shabbat. But he can only sit on it once Shabbat is entered, because that's when his Avelut is suspended for the Shabbat period, at least for Fasya. So Motzei Shabbat, on Motzei Shabbat, Afo Pishen Lo Yoshev El Yom Echad, he only has 1 day left in his Avelut. Chozer B'Kofeh, he still has to flip all the beds over. So even though he's only going to practice Avelut on Sunday morning for a very short duration, which means, because it's Mitzvah Tayom Kekulo, and so he's only going to, it's going to be Motzei Shabbat, and then Sunday morning, still he has to flip all the beds back over, because Shabbat is over, and the Avelut continues, so he has to do that. Okay, now, Matan Rabbanan, a kofeh mitato, lo mitato bilvad hu kofeh, kol amitot sheyesh lo betoch beito. Fiat amita is not simply on his bed, or his particular place where he sits, it has to do with all the beds in the house have to be flipped over. So now, Vafiru, Yeshto Eser Mitot, Vasara Mikomot, and even him himself, he has 10 beds in 10 different locations, Kofet Kulat. They all have to be flipped over. So it doesn't matter how many beds in the house, you have to flip them over. And it doesn't matter how many locations you have the beds in, they all have to be flipped over in concert with his Avelut here. Vafilu Chamishachin, Umetechad, even if you have 5 brothers, only one of them passed away, Kulan Kofin. All of them have this practice of Fiat Amita. So Kviyat Amita is not limited. It's expansive in the sense that anybody who's an Avel has to do Kviyat Amita. And not only the Avel, but any Amita that's in his house, or any Amita that they have anywhere, is they do Kviyat Amita with. If it's a bed whose usage is not for sitting on or for sleeping on, in tzarich l'kol putat, then you do not have to flip it over. The purpose of this bed is for storage. So that bed, I mean, today we use the term bed. Bed for us means like a mattress and a bed to sleep on. In their day, it meant like a couch or any surface that you could sit on or lean on. So here you have a surface in which they store kelim. It's not an area that you normally would sleep on. Therefore, you don't have to flip it over. Dargesh ain't tzarich l'kafuto. Or dargesh, you do not have to flip it over. El zokfo, you just stand it up. You don't flip it over like fiat amita, but you just stand it up against the wall, so it's not in use. What a dargesh is, it's unclear here. The Gemara is going to discuss it. I just say the loose translation of dargesh. One is a footstool. The other one is a couch. So it's one of those two items. Shimon Gamliel Omer, dargesh matir et karbitav. You release its loops. V'u nofel me'elav, and it falls by itself. You don't have to do fiat amita. You just release the rope, and it falls down. So Gemara asks the question, my dargesh. What is this dargesh here? Samarula arsod gado. It is the bed of God. Now this is a difficult statement in the Gemara. Arsod gado, Rashi translates, mitash miachtim ota l'mazal tov. It's a bed that was set just for mazal tov. Veim mashmi veim klum. It's not used at all. They just leave it there. The bed is left there in order to be a auspicious bed for the mazal to come to this house, which seems to be a problem of nichush, this idea of people being superstitious and putting out a bed for God. It's a practice that's mentioned here in the Gemara, it's mentioned in Sanhedrin, also I think in the Gemara in Pesachim, it's mentioned in a number of places, that this idea that they used to have a bed, the Gemara states in other places that cleanliness is godliness, and therefore cleanliness invites in wealth. That a person who is clean or keeps their house clean, that invites in wealth. This might be a part of that aspect, which is that you have one bed that's just made but nothing's on it, it's just prepared. Part of that aspect or that idea of cleanliness brings wealth. That's one possibility. Arsa de Gada also might be that the Gemara talks about darke emori, that you're not allowed to do these superstitious acts in terms of medicinal solutions. But if it's something that is true and tried, then you're allowed to do it. And it doesn't have a problem in Nichush. So there's a possibility here that this is the same thing, that this Arsa de Gada was well known as a auspicious item that worked, and therefore it wasn't a problem of Nichush. The other possibility is that it was to thank Hashem. It was to show Hashem that we have more than we need, that we have an extra bed here. And so basically it was a bed, an indication of Hakarat HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why it was allowed. So there are different ways to deal with it. It's trying to reconcile or deal with the problem that Arsa de Gada seems to be some sort of superstitious item, so they're trying to answer why it wasn't problematic and it wasn't Nichush. But they're coming up with different solutions as to what this practice was. Amalei Rabo Elimiato Gabi Melech. If that's the case, what are you going to say by a king? Titan Kol Ha'Misubim Al Aretz. By the king, when he is the Avel, everybody comes and sits on the ground with him. Who may save Al Dargish? And he's on a Dargish. Mi Ikemide Dadi No Lo Otvinei V'Hashtem Otvinei. But the king never, the bed here, if you're saying that it's Arsa de Gada, nobody ever sits on it, nobody ever uses it. Now all of a sudden, the king's an Avel, so everybody's on the ground and the king sits on it. You're going to use a bed, you're going to use a seat that he never used before? Samad Kol Ravashi, my Kushya. So Ravashi challenges the question, or the premise of the question. He says, Nidahava achila v'shtia, the eating and drinking. Da'ara yidna lo ochline v'lo ashkine. Until now, the Haman Am doesn't come in and feed him and give him food and eat with him. The king eats alone, he provides his own food. All of a sudden now, you have the people coming in, providing him food and drink, and they're sitting with him. So hashto ochline v'ashkine. And now all of a sudden they're doing this. Ella, ikasha akasha. So that's not a question. The fact that we're doing something unusual here, or doing something that we didn't do before, that's not a question, because the whole process of aveilut involves that. Here normally a king eats by himself, feeds himself, you know, takes care of his own food needs. Here all of a sudden the am is there, giving him food, eating with him. These are unusual circumstances, so too, he'll sit on the dargesh. That's not a question. But this is the question, the Tanya. Dargesh inu tzarich lekafuto ela zokfo. You don't have to flip it over, but you just stand it up. The arsa de gado, and if you're talking about arsa de gado, amayinu tzirich lekafuto. Why don't you have to flip it over? Atanya, we saw before, kofeh mitato, lo mitato, bilvadu kofeh. When he flips over the beds, he flips up not just his bed, alokol mitato, sheishlo betoch beito, kofeh. You dump them over. Gemara says, my kash, again, that's not a good question. Midahava, mita miyuchada de kelim. Similar to the mita that is used for storing items on it. Tatani, mita mita miyuchada de kelim, in tzirich lekafuto. You don't have to flip it over. So to here, the arsa of the God is not used for sitting on, it's not used for laying on, so maybe you don't have to flip it over. Elikasha akasha. This is the problem with your explanation. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, dargesh matir karbitav. The dargesh, you can release its loops. V'no fel me'lav, and it falls by itself. Bisa gadatka, arsa of the God, my karbitin itay. If it's a regular bed, a bed that's left empty for the mazal tov, then that bed doesn't have karbitin, doesn't have loops on it. So then what are you talking about loops for? That makes no sense. So now we're back to square one. What is this dargesh over here? The one suggestion was it was an arsa de gado, and that's why it had all these dinim. We tried to challenge it. Most of the questions were knocked off, but the last question is the next statement in the Braita, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion, which is that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you just release the loops. Well, that doesn't work with an arsa de gado because it's a regular bed. So when Ravin came, he says, this Rabbonon told him, and who is that? That's Rav Tachlifa bar Marova. His name is Rav Tachlifa bar Marova. He frequented the leather market, or the leather shuk. My dargesh, what's an argesh? Arsa de tzila. It is a leather bed. So leather bed means uses a hide or a throw to be the box spring, basically. And until now, we talked about the box springs being ropes that went across or a frame that was there. Now we're talking about it being a throw or a hide that is the box spring that holds up the bed. So now, here's a question about the gear service. Itamar Nami or Itamar Nami is left out according to the Gra. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu dargesh siguro mitocho, mita siruga al gaba. The way that a bed differs from a dargesh is the way that it's attached to the bed frame. When it comes to our dargesh, the holes are made into the bed frame itself, and then you tie the rope to insert it in the bed frame, and then it holds to the hide. So you tie the hide to the bed frame itself with the rope going through the holes in the bed frame. Whereas when it takes a mita, a regular mita, is that the hide or whatever cover you're putting on top goes over the bars themselves, over the bed frame, and then you tie it either underneath or through back underneath it. You don't have to tie it through like a hole in the bed frame, but rather you tie it to itself or you tie, wrap it around the bed frame. It doesn't go through the bed frame itself. So that's what he says is the difference. And that would be the difference here also as well about releasing, flipping the bed versus releasing it. By the dargesh, you can release it because it'll just drop out. You pull it out of the holes, the whole thing collapses. Whereas by the mitah, where it's tied around the bed, you have to untie the whole thing, so you flip the bed over instead. Alright, so Amar Rabbi Yaakov bar Ach, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that you can release it by simply untying it, and then it releases. So Amar Rabbi Yaakov bar Ach, Amar Rabbi Asi, Mita shenikla'teh yotzim zokfa vidayok. So you have a bed that has a canopy on it. The way they describe, they have different types of canopies here. Some beds have canopies, have four posts and a canopy on it. Here it's talking about nikla'teh, which means it has a single post on each end at the head of the bed, at the foot of the bed, and then as a canopy that comes out like a tent-like canopy over it. So the problem is, how do you do kiyata mita now? You can't flip the bed over, because the poles for the canopy are going to get in the way of flipping the bed over. That's another one of the reasons why we don't do kiyata mita today, because, again, the Tosafot suggested over there that our bed posts on the four corners are up and down. If you flip it over, the bed is just as functional either way. Like we talked about before, like a platform bed. A bed which has a piece of wood or beams across it that holds up the mattress, and if you flip it over, it's equally usable on both sides. It doesn't really change the dynamic of the bed. So that's one of the reasons why we don't do kviyat mitah. But here, because nikla'teh, you don't flip the bed. What you do is you stand it up. You stand it up against the wall. V'dayon, that's enough. Tana banan. Shein al gabe kiseh, if he sleeps on a chair, or al gabe udyane gdola, or he sleeps on a... It's not clear what this udyane is. Whether it's a low oblong bench or a stool of some sort. It's something that they supposedly stored things on. They used, brought it by the table, and they used to put the things that were going to be used for the table, they used to put it on it. Al gabe karko, or he laid on the ground, lo yatsa yidei chovato. That doesn't work. What do you mean, lo yatsa yidei chovato? We saw this earlier again in the Masechta, Amar Rabbi Yochanan shelo kiyem kfiat amita. That's not called kfiat amita. Kfiat amita means literally flipping the beds over. Just because you don't sleep on the bed, doesn't qualify as kfiyata mita. Kfiyata mita means literally flipping the beds. Where you sleep is a part of what happens or the result of kfiyata mita. But kfiyata mita has to be done, and that has to do with the symbolism that we talked about before, that kfiyata mita represents the idea that you flipped over. I mean, you did something that caused the Shem to have to change the nature or the course of nature and have someone pass away. So too, you have to be kofed mita to show that there's a change in the course of nature. But their couches were similar to beds. Right. When we say mita here, couch, their couches had no back to them. Might have had an armrest, probably not. On one side, they might have an armrest to lean on to when they ate. And that they ate on mitot. They didn't just sit on mitot, they ate on them. When we're talking about mitot here, mita is a generic term for something that they laid on, they sat on, and they slept on. That's why he had to flip the bed back over for the menachem, meaning that the menachem kin, there was nowhere for them to sit. So it was beneath their dignity to sit on the floor, then he flipped the bed for them. That was what we saw in the beginning of today's daf, right? Tanabanan, mechabdin umarbitzim beit avel. You can sweep in the beit avel. Marbitzim, you can sprinkle water to keep the dust settled. Umadichin kiarot bekosov betlokiot bekaitoniot bebeit avel. You can wash the dishes, the cups. Here it's lochiot and kaitoniot. Whether these lochiot, some say mean jugs, and kaitoniot are goblets. Others would suggest that kiarot are bowls, lochiot are plates, and kaitoniot are pitchers. But whatever they are, you're allowed to wash all of these items in the Beit HaAvel. But you can't bring in the incense to burn inside the Beit HaAvel. So life is conducted as normal. It's not the Avel who's doing this, but people in the Beit HaAvel can wash the dishes and can clean up. They don't have to leave the place a wreck. They don't have to leave it a mess. Ini, is that really true? Vatani bar kapara. Emevarchim lo ala mugmar v'lo besamim Beit HaAvel. We don't make a bracha on the incense in the Beit HaAvel. But bruchehu de lo mevarchina. It sounds you don't make a bracha. Hatu ye matina. It's there. The only reason we have to say you don't make a bracha is because the incense was there. You're just not making a bracha on it. So how do I reconcile here between these two items? One who says no incense whatsoever, and the other one says yes incense, no bracha. Lokasha habeveit avel habeveit menachamim. One of them is in the Beit Avel, one of them is in the Beit Menachemim. It's not clear what it means. Rashi says Menachemim means Kovav Mevim Inyanim Shalokhlim, which makes it sound like the Beit Menachemim is the Avel post the funeral. So post the funeral, then they do bring in the incense, but they don't make bracha. Beit Avel, Beit Menachemim means that in the Beit Menachemim they do bring the incense there. They just don't make the bracha. Whereas in the Beit Avel, before the mate is buried, they don't have incense whatsoever. They don't do anything, meaning that it's inappropriate in the face of the mate to have the incense there. That is Rashi's explanation over here. Others explain that Beit Menachemim is where those that come to console are sitting, where it would be appropriate to have the mugmar, versus Beit Avel is where the Avel himself is sitting, where it would be inappropriate to have the mugmar at all. Others suggest it's just the opposite, where you do bring in Bisamim to the place where the mate is, because you want to offset the Reach Ra, versus the Beit Avel, where the Avel is not supposed to have any oneg, and it would be inappropriate to have the bisamim there. And in the halacha, this also is mashpia as to whether you would bring in bisamim to a place where there was a mate or into a place where there is an avel. We will see later in today's daf that incense was used again because of the problem of lack of refrigeration, which means that there's a possibility that the mate smelled, and therefore they put mugmar, they put things in to stop the smell from coming out, which is also part of practice. In Chevrut Kedishot, many of them put vinegar on the mate, and part of that might have been to offset the possible foul smell from a mate. They used vinegar, which was a strong smelling item that would override the smell of the mate. Ein malachi in the Beit Avel, you cannot take the food that you're bringing to do the Sudat Avara or to present the Avel with food, lo betavla. You don't bring it on a, tavla can mean a table sometimes, but it means a large ornate type of presentation. Velo beiskutla, which is a salver or a waiter. So again, it's a silver type of tray that you bring it in. Lo biknon, which is a large basket. Ela b'salim, basic baskets. You can only bring it in. You bring it in a simple manner. You don't make it into a big display or a big presentation. You bring it to the house of an avel, and that's appropriate. Ben omrim birkat avelim b'moed. On chol ha'moed, we don't say birkat avelim. Again, we're going to get to this in the Gemara in Ketubot. Birkat avelim in the benching, what it is. But you don't do that on chol ha'moed. Ala v'lumdim b'shura. If you bury someone on Chol HaMoed, you do have a shura. When they leave the, after the burial, they do stand in a shura and be menachem the avel. Umenachemim. You do the nichum, avelim, and then potrim et rabim, and then you dismiss everybody because there's no public avelut on Chol HaMoed. Emenachem et amita berechov. We don't leave out the bed out on the rechov. Shalor gilat aspeit. During Chol HaMoed, you don't take the beer out into the public domain because why do they put it out in the public domain? In order to have a hespet. In their day, the house was very small. That's where the mate was. They brought the mate out into the road. That's where everybody gathered for the hespet and for all of the mourning procession that would go to the funeral. So we don't do that on Chol HaMoed because that's going to engender people giving hespetim, which are inappropriate on Chol HaMoed. V'lo shel nashim le'olam mipnei kavod. We don't take the women out into that public sphere because of kavod, which we'll see. The Gemara will discuss this in a minute. Tarabanan, Brishona, Yumolichim Bebeit Avel Ashirim Bikiltot Shel Kesef. They used to take the food to the Beit Avel of the wealthy in baskets of silver, Vishel Zahav, and in gold. Vaniim Bisale Nitzarim Shel Arava Klupa. And for the Aniim, they used to bring it with baskets made out of peeled willow twigs. Vayuniim Mitbaishim, and the poor people were embarrassed by this. So whether it was the Avelim themselves, meaning that they were doing this for the Avelim, a wealthy Avel, you brought it this way for poor, you did not? Or is this the people themselves who are bringing it how they presented it to the Avel. The wealthy brought it like this, and the poor brought it like this. What's clear here is you're creating a class distinction, which we don't want. In truth, death is the ultimate equalizer, because everybody dies. I mean, no matter wealthy or poor, everybody ends up in the same place once one has passed away. So over here, to have these differences in death were felt to be inappropriate. It was embarrassing here at the moment of death, which again is this equalizer. All of a sudden, we're starting to show these differences between wealthy and poor, class distinctions. So Yitkinu Sheyakov Mevim B'Selin Yitzirim. They made it that everybody brought it in these regular baskets, these plain baskets of the peeled willow twigs. For the kavod, for the sake of the aniyim. Again, whether it's the aveilim who are aniyim or whether it's the people who are bringing their aniyim, either way, in order to not have these class distinctions, therefore they made it equal. Maybe we have other things like this. By the Mishnah talks about by bikurim, very good. By bikurim, by kriyat haTorah, we have it, and by birkat achatan, birkat erusin, we have it as well. A lot of these things where some people knew how to read, some people did not know how to read. So by Bikurim, the people who read would read it. People didn't know how to read, the Kohen would read in front of them, would prompt them to read. Gemara says then people stopped coming. People didn't know how to read, didn't want to come up, it was embarrassing. So then they read before everybody. They prompted everybody, even if you knew how to read, so there'd be no embarrassment. Kriyat haTorah. Some people knew how to go up and read the Torah without any prompt. Other people needed a Baal Kore to read for them. So again, people were embarrassed, so they made a Baal Kore for everybody. So everybody would have the Baal Kore, there'd be no embarrassment. Also, by the Birkat Erusin. Some of the Chatanim knew what to say, or how to say the Birkat Erusin. Some of them knew how to say Ariat Mikudeshet Li, so they said it. And then what happened was, the people didn't say, were embarrassed. So then they gave over Birkat Erusin to the Mesader Kedushim. Then the Mesader Kedushim makes the bracha instead of the Chatan, who seemingly should be the one who makes the bracha. And then he also say Ariat Mikudeshet Li, he prompts the Chatan, no matter how well-versed the Chatan is in the matter. So all these things are done to protect those that don't, but also to keep it on par so nobody's embarrassed by the circumstances. The world they used to get with white glass, which was expensive type of glass servers. And they got colored glass. I don't think it means a single color necessarily. It might have been just mixes of colors. It wasn't a clear, beautiful glass. It was of lesser quality. By you and him, by Shim again, the Aniyim were embarrassed. Everybody brings in the colored glass. Again, to maintain the kavod of the Aniyim. They used to leave the Ashirim's face exposed, and they used to cover the face of Aniyim. Their faces were sunken, dark, because of the famines that had taken place. They didn't have what to eat. So their appearance was not an appearance that they wanted to show to others. Therefore, they covered their faces. On the bier, when they brought it out, they left the face open. It was like an open, well, there was no casket, so everything was open. They were on a bed, but they left their face exposed. But they covered over the face of an aniyim because they didn't have all this makeup. They didn't make it so that they were presentable. So the aniyim, because of their circumstances, were not a pleasant sight. So they covered it over. Whereas the shirim, who had robust faces, they left them open because they were not affected by the death necessarily as much as the aniyim were. Because the face of the aniyim was darkened, sunken because of the famine, meaning the lack of food that they had, therefore death had a much greater impact on them. So vayu aniyim itbashim, again the aniyim were embarrassed by this, itkinu sheyem mechasim pnei hakol. They covered everybody's face, nobody's face was left exposed. Ibnei kvodan shel aniyim, again for the kavod of the aniyim. Bishana yu motzim ashirim bedargesh, aniyim either beklika, or Tosfot brings another possibility of a kliva. Eventually it took the Ashirim out on Dargash, which brings us back to this, the same thing again. This can't be a footstool here, so it means a couch. But it means a fancier type of bed that they took him out on. Whereas the Aniyim were taken out on this Klika, which is nothing fancy. Tosafot says even maybe a Kliva. The translation which he says is like a ladder-like structure, which is just a frame which has ropes just stretched across it that they lay him out on. It's more like a cot or a stretcher that they took him out on. Or others like the Rambam and others suggest that the klipa or the klika here is something that fastened the mate to the bed. It was either a loop or a rope that kept the mate on the bed. So again, by the rich people, they had these larger beds. The mate stayed on the bed because of that. When you have these narrower or smaller beds, for the aniyim, they had to fasten them somehow onto the bed. By you and aniyim, it by shim, again, the aniyim were embarrassed by the differentiation. They leveled the playing field again. Everybody was taken out in the same manner on this lower form. For the kavod of neim. Someone who had an intestinal problem when they passed away, They used to put the Mugmar incense by them because of the foul smell associated with them because of the nature of their death. People who had stomach ailments or intestinal ailments who were still alive were embarrassed by, look what happens to these people. It left them feeling not so good. So they put incense for everybody, for the kavod of those that were sick but were alive, so that they wouldn't feel that there was a distinction or differentiation made in death that would embarrass them while they were still alive. That they look what's going to happen to you when you die. Everybody's going to know, and you're going to have this foul smell. You're going to have to put the incense there. So they made no distinction. When woman who was a nida passed away, they were matbil. They put into the mikveh all the kelim that were associated with it because she was tmeya, because she was a nida while she was still alive. And then those women who were menstruating were embarrassed that there was distinction given to a woman who was nida in death versus a woman who was not a nida in death. So the tumat nida for all this kelim, they were used to service the woman prior to her death. And that they were publicizing something which was otherwise somewhat private issue. And therefore it was embarrassing to those women who were nidot, who were alive in nidot. Because of the kavod of the nidot chayot, they've said everybody will take all kelim to mikveh, then you can't differentiate him, or you can't tell her whether she was a nida or not when she passed away. So zavin could either be by a man or a woman. If they are a zav, then again they have this tumah yotzei mitoch gufan. So then, by the case of zavin meitim, he used zavin chayim mitbaishin. Again, those that were zavin, that were alive, were embarrassed by this distinction that was made in public. So, hitkinu sheim matbilin agava kol mipnei kvodan shel zavim chayim. They made sure that there was always, everything was equal, so that there was no embarrassment left to the zavim that were alive. Correct. These are kelim prior to their death. Once they die, they have tumatamate, so it's a problem tumatamate. These are kelim used in service of the person before they died. So if they die while they're a zav, or they die while they're a nida, then it leaves the problem with the kelim that were used to serve them before they die, or tmeim, because they were nida or zav. Then if you go and make a big public display of taking all the kelim out to the mikveh, they empty the house and take out the kelim to the mikveh, makes it obvious that they were zavin or nidot. So here they said everybody's house is going to be taken care of that so that there is no distinction drawn between people. This is an unbelievable statement. It's got a lot of truth to it, which is that in the beginning, the levaya would turn out to be more difficult for the relatives than the actual death itself. That the death itself, okay, it was traumatic already. But what became more traumatic was that the distinctions, the class distinctions being drawn here, made it that the krovim, the relatives of the mate, then had to undertake huge expenditures in order to make sure that they were on par, keeping up with the Joneses. They had to make sure that they had the same funeral procession, the same investment in the procession. Otherwise, they'd be embarrassed in public by the fact that they didn't do this for their mate, or that they couldn't afford to do it this for this their mate. And so it left the situation in which the Krovim feared the funeral procession more than the death itself because of the public display about what was being spent and how it was being done. Adju Krovav Menichim Oto Borchin. That it got to the point where the relatives would just ditch the mate because it was too much of an undertaking. The cost of the funeral procession became exorbitant, and there was this obligation to keep up and make sure that they were on par with everybody else. Ad Shabbat Rabbi Gamliel, this is a beautiful thing here, Rabbi Gamliel, who's an Asi, who is wealthy, Benhag Kalut Rosh Be'atzmo, and he was Noeg Be'atzmo. Here, Tosfot brings two possibilities. One, a relative of his he did this to, or himself. Tosfot favors himself, because it says Be'atzmo here, that he did something that was beneath his dignity. He said, I'm going out with simple linen garments. Practice till today, which is the tachrichim that we use, are simple white linen garments. And this was, again, this ultimate equalizer. So there's no differentiation in death. And that became the minagam that everybody now goes out with klei pishtan. He solved the problem by him, a great person who had the wealth and had the ability to do, but he set the precedent. He set the standard by which people do this. It's gone the other way now that people now make no big deal about the funeral procession and the shrouds, that they even put them in like some ragged one zuz worth of clothing. I mean that nobody makes a fancy funeral, nobody makes a fancy shroud. And the same is true with the coffins themselves, that they use a simple pine wood box if you have to use a coffin in places that they bury with coffins. And the shrouds are the klei pishtan. Everybody uses the same tachrichim. Again, this practice of making it so that there's no competitive issue or cost issue for the individuals who are bearing, and it makes it into a place where the kavod hamet gets lost. in the fact that the Krovim are burdened with taking care of a mate, and they fear the funeral procession, instead of making it a cathartic experience where they're taking the mate out, they're burying the mate, they're running away and leaving the mate there. So that's what this solved, and again, that's the minhag today in general. We don't leave out the mitan rechov during Chol HaMoed. Amra Papa, ein moed bifnei Talmud Chacham. Chol HaMoed doesn't make a difference when you're talking about a Talmud Chacham. This leads to the quote-unquote exception to the rule, which is that by Talmud Chachamim, you do have espedim on Chol HaMoed. B'chol shekein chano kupurim, don't stand in the way of a Talmud Chacham. Bani milei bifanav, that's only if he is present. Aval shalo bifanav, if it's not in front of him, lo, that's not true. So again, here, you really open up a little bit of Pandora's box, because who's determined to be a Talmud Chacham? And we try to minimize this. It's a problem in the month of Nisan in general. People, many times, they begin the Hesped and say, there are no Hespedim during Nisan, but, da-da-da-da. Or the way they do is they speak about the positive aspects of the mate. They try not to make it a sad thing. They try to make it a happy type of speech. People try to get around the problem of Hespedim. There are still people that hold to form and say that, look, that's the halacha, because we don't make Hespedim. We'll do the Hespedim and Shloshim after the month of Nisan has passed, and there are people who are makpid to make sure of it, especially the Yekis. Have a minute during Nisan, they will not allow anything. They simply do the burial, they won't allow even the remotest type of hesped to be involved. So Mari says, is that really true when he's not there, that they don't have a hesped on Chol HaMoed? So Rav Kahana, Savte, the Rav Zvid, min Narda, v'pum Naro. Rav Kahana was giving a hesped for Rav Zvid of Narda in Pum Naro, in a different place. So Rav Papi, Yom Shmua Hava, uki b'fan Abdami. It was the day that he got the news. So Shmua, the day of Shmua, is as if you're right in front of the mate. I mean, that it has the same emotional impact, the day of the news, as if the mate is present, and therefore you can do the hesped. So now, Amar Ula, hesped is a lave. The word hesped is to engender, or is the practice of banging on one's chest. Shtichtiv, because the pasuk says, al shadayim softim, that on the chest one pounds the softim. The eulogy engenders or causes people to bang on their chest. That is the sorrow that comes out of the word or the technical term hesped. Tipuach, which is a technical term, is biyad. That is hitting one's hands. Generally, it means to clap. Kilus is beregel, is stomping on the ground with one's feet. So these are all signs of distress, being distraught, of avilut, and these are public displays of it. So banging on one's chest, clapping one's hands, or stomping one's feet. These are all these types of practices that were done, showing one's feelings and emotions, expressing them about the mate that's there. So Tanu Banan, Amikales lo yikales bisandal elabimin al. That's one girsa. Another girsa is Amikales Tosfa brings lo yikales lo bisandal velo min al. Should do with shoes or with sandalim. Both of them are so that the person doesn't become injured. The problem with the sandal is your foot might turn over and you will sprain your ankle, hurt your foot. So you'll need a structurally strong shoe to do it, and that's when you can bang on the ground with your feet. Or the other possibility is mipnei sakana, which is the Gemara says here. The problem is sakana. Is it sakana to the person who's stomping? Or is it sakana to the other people, the person stomping? Yeah. That if you stomp on other people's feet, it might be a problem. And that might lead to the other girsa, which is don't do it in a sandal or in a manal, barefoot. You can only do it barefoot. So that it prevents the problem of people stomping on each other with their shoes. It might prevent injury to oneself, injury to others. So you don't do it with a shoe at all. That's what the Gemara says about kilus. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Avel, kevin shin ni anea rosho, shuv ein menachamim reshaim leshev etzlo. As soon as the Avel hints with the shake of his head that he's done, you don't do any more nichum. The menachamim cannot remain there anymore. So the Avel gives basically the sense that I'm ready to retire for the night. I've had enough of the nichum, then the people who are visiting have to take the hint that it's time to go over. It's a problem today again. People come at all hours of the day, night, and they have to give their chance for the Avel to rest and to have their own time. And so, therefore, if the Avel says no, or he indicates to his facial movements, you have to respect that and say that it's time to leave. Everybody has to stand up before a Nasi, except for a mourner and someone who is sick. So the Nasi, because of the Kavoda Nasi, everybody stands up. The Avel and the Chole, because of their predicament, don't have to stand up. Everybody else you tell to sit down, except the Avel and Chole. Question of whether this is connected to the previous statement or not, which is that since they're not obligated to stand up, you don't have to tell them to sit down because they weren't obligated to stand up. That's one possibility, because they didn't stand up, so you don't have to tell them to sit down. Another possibility is even if they voluntarily stand up, you don't have to tell them to sit down because they can sit down when they please. mean, as opposed to others who stand up for the Kavod HaNasi, they have to wait for the Nasi to say, all be seated, so that everybody can sit down at that point in time, because they were not granted permission to sit, they must remain standing. The Velon Choleh, which have a dispensation anyway to sit down, they can decide whenever they want to sit down. They don't need to be told to sit down. They sit down at their own will, whenever they feel it necessary to sit down. The other possibility is, I think the Rambam reads it this way, which is that it's an inauspicious statement to an Avel and a Choleh to say, Shvu, sit down, which in Bavishah means that either the Choleh means that you're going to pass away, Shvu, or the Avel, like go back to your mourning or your bad date or circumstances. So maybe that was an inauspicious statement to say to someone who's in that predicament, and that's why we don't say it to them. The other possibility, some suggest over here, is that the problem is that an Avel and Choleh can't stand upright. That standing up as a matter of kavod is only when you stand up clearly and upright, so that it's clear that you're standing up for kavod of the individual. If you're bent over, or if you're just lifting yourself slightly, and it's not obvious that you're standing up for the kavod of the individual, that's not called kavod. So that might be the exemption of Avel and Choleh, which is that they don't have the strength. They don't have the ability to stand upright because of their predicament. Therefore, standing up is not meaningful, because they're not going to stand up in a way that presents a standing of kavod. Avel yom rishon asur le'echol lechem mishelo. Avel may not eat from his own food on the first day. This is the idea of sudat havra'a, or meals provided by others on the first day when the Avel returns to his house. Again, we learn this out of Yechezkel, which says Yechezkel may not do this. The lechem anashim lo tochel. You will not eat other people's food, implying that other Avelim do eat other people's food. Rabbi Rab Yosef, machlefesu dutayu la'adodi. They exchanged meals in order to accomplish this. Each had meals in exchange, that there must have been Avelim at the same time. They exchanged meals in order to accomplish this, similar to the statement made in the Gemara Megillah with regards to exchanging meals in order to accomplish whether it's sudat pirim or mishloach manot. Rabbi Rab Yehuda Amarab, mate ba'ir, kol b'nei ir asurim b'siyat malacha. If there is a mate, if there's a person who's passed away in the city, then out of respect for the niftar, nobody's allowed to work in the city. Everybody has to desist from work. Rav Amnuna Ikla Darumta, he went to this place, Darumta, Shama Kol Shipura de Shichva. He heard the bugles, the shofar of those that had passed away, meaning that it was clear it was a funeral procession. And he saw people working. What's going on here? There's a funeral procession going on. There's a mate here in the city. Why are you guys working? He put them into excommunication for violating the restriction against working in a city where there's a mate. He says, he said to him, isn't there a person who's passed away in the city? How is it that you're working? This is the big heter that we rely on today. He says that there are different groups in the city. Now, whether that means that they were different guilds, or there were different sections of the city, or different groupings in the city, by that it means that the people who are in that group are governed by the rule that they have to desist from work if there's a mate there. But since the city is so large, we're not going to say the whole city has to desist from work. It's not necessarily kavod to the mate now, because the whole city doesn't know the mate. They're not involved in that community. So if you have different communities, then each community is governed by its own rules and its own grouping. And chaburata might have a smaller definition today, meaning that it has to do with the social structure in general. Do you belong to a community? Do you belong to a shul? Do you belong to, now maybe it's by relatives? There are subsets of groupings by which that is, the grouping is affected by the mate, but not everybody as a whole is affected by the mate. So that is amat in the excommunication, the shamta I put in, because you're right. Then you don't have to do this. As Tosafot points out, there is a din of halavayata mate, which is separate from this. This is out of respect for the fact that there's a mate there. Havayata mate, we say every morning, and when we say Birkat HaTorah, that there's no shiur to Havayata mate. So that means that everybody has to go out for Havayata mate. The Gemara there says, unless he has the proper kavod. You're not obligated in Havayata mate if he already is given the proper kavod. The Gemara over there talked about what exactly it means that he has proper kavod for the Havayata mate. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, kol mitkashe al meito yoter midai, al meit acher hu buche. Person who over mourns, over cries over a loss, he's crying for another mate, basically. He's bringing bad upon himself. He's crying so much, that means that it's in the cards now that there's going to be another mate. Because you cried beyond what should have been for this mate. That means that you're already crying on the cheshbon of someone else. That means that you're going to have another mate come about. There was this woman in the neighborhood of Rav Huna, Avalah Shiv'a Bani. She had 7 children. Mate Chad Minayu. One of them passed away. She was over mourning, over crying over the loss of this individual. Shalach Rav Huna lo ta'abdei hochi. Don't do this. Don't keep up like this. It's not a good thing to do. Lo ashkacha abe. She did not pay attention to pay heed to what he said. Shalach lo. He sent back to her. Itzaitit mutav. If you listen to me, everything will be okay. Ilo. Tzavit. Zavato leidach. Me. Get prepared for another death. Prepare. Now, either you can say here a comfort or a pair for the other one, which means someone else is going to join him. Prepare his partner who's going to be there with him. I mean, another one of your children is going to pass away. Or zavato is sometimes means your provisions for the way. Prepare the provisions for the way, meaning that you're going to have another mate here, so get ready the tachrifim and the provisions for the way. Umitu kulu, all the children in the end passed away. But so far malat, timosh zavato lenafshech. You may as well get your tachrifim ready, because you're going also. Umita, and sure enough, she passed away. And this is an example, a live example of this idea of mourning too much or crying too much over the mate. Altiv kulu mate, pealta nudulo. Says in Yirmiyahu, this is talking about for Yoshiyahu's son, who's going to die, don't cry for the dead, and do not bemoan for him. So when it says, Al tibku the mate, you'll tear me die, don't cry too much for the mate. Balto nudu lo, you'll tear me kishiur. And do not bemoan or moan or sigh over this more than the normal shiur. Ha keitzad. So now you have to define what is the shiur that we're talking about here. Shloshe yamim lebechi. First 3 days are for crying. That's why we saw there on Avelut, the first 3 days are different than the subsequent 4 days in the Avelut. The first 3 days are more intense form of the Avelut. There's at times for crying. Vishiva lehesped, and 7 days for moaning, discussing, and talking about the mate. Loshim geyutzu letisporet, and 30 days for laundering and for cutting one's hair. Some change the gifts of the kibbutz here. Mikan veilech, amar kodesh baruch hu, yatem rachmanim yoter mimeni. But you're more rachmanim than me? Apostle continues and says, Bichu bacho laholich. Weep bitterly for the one who is going. Amar Rav Yehuda, laholich below banim. That's someone who doesn't have children. Bishua ben Levi, lo azza lebeit avla elamanda azza below banim. He would only go to visit to a beit avel where the person didn't have any children. Again, because there are no children, then nobody left over. There's no continuation. There's no real availim for the individual. So he used to bid him dichtiv. Bechu bacho leholech. You should cry for the one who's holech. Holech means the one who's going. Why is he going? Because he leaves nothing behind. There's no residual remnant of him. The context of the pasuk is talking about that the king will be taken away and he's not coming back. Meaning that the king will be put into exile, killed, and you will not see him again. He's not going to return to the place of his forefathers, the place from which he left. So it says, Al tivku lemeit v'altanudu lo. You're not going to cry for him. You're not going to moan him. You can cry for the one who's going to be taken away, because that's what's going to happen. He's going to be taken away and he's not coming back. So the Gemara takes it not as speaking literally in the story, but rather more figuratively, which is, don't cry too much and do not moan too much for them. You cry for those that are leaving, for the departed one, but in a limited manner. What is that limited manner? That's what the Gemara explains over here. So now the pasuk continues, which says, he will not return again to see the land of his birth. So again, here it's talking about the king, the son of Yoshiyahu, who is going to be sent into exile, killed, and he will not return here. He'll be killed on foreign land, or he'll be thrown away. So Ravona Amar Zisha Baravira Vishana Ba. This is a person who violated a sin and did it again. Ravuna the Tamed, Ravuna the Shitato, we've seen a number of times before. Dom Ravuna, Kevin Shavara Dama Vira Vishana Ba. Person does an Avera once, and then does it again. Huchrolo. It's mutar for him. I mean, it's mutar? It becomes like a heter. I mean, a person has a certain amount of inhibition against doing something that is restricted. Once they've done it once, and then twice, they've broken down that inhibition, and it becomes less of a problem to do it again. A person feels more comfortable or less inhibition in doing it, and therefore, this is the idea, which is, the pasuk says, ki lo yashuv old. Yashuv means to return again. So the yashuv old, v'ra'at eretz milato. If you don't go back, then you're not going to see Eretz Milato. You're not going to be able to do tshuva. If you repeat it, then you're not going to do tshuva because you've already done it twice. It becomes Naseh Lo Keheter. Amar Rabbi Levi, Avel Shlosha Yamim Arishonim Yiret Atzmo Kilu Cherev Munechet Lo Ben Shtei Yerchutav or Shtei Ktefav. In the first 3 days of Avelut, an Avel should feel like there's a sword sitting between his thighs or between his shoulders. Mishlosha Vat Shiva, from the 3 days until the 7 days, meaning the latter half of the Avelut of the Shiva, as if the sword is standing in the room opposite him in the corner. It's in the city, but it's not right next to him. The idea being, and we saw this before, that death also requires a certain amount of tshuva and introspection about the fact that Hashem took this individual from us. And that's why the Kfiyat HaMitah, this is related to the Kfiyat HaMitah. Why do we do the Kfiyat HaMitah? There's an assumption that you caused me to take away this individual, so therefore we have to do tshuva. Tosfot over here quotes from the Yishami, which is a beautiful mashal in the Yishami. It says, when you have a pile of stones, and then you pull out one of the stones from the pile, all the stones shake. So the same idea, that when we lose one person from a chabura, from a group, from a family, that shakes the entire group. And everybody's affected by it, and everybody has to do some introspection or think about, why do we lose someone who's a part of our group over here? And so that's an important reflection, or the part of Avelut, which is not just about mourning and feeling sorry and upset, but also this introspective side of it, which is, what can I do to improve? And that's part of the process afterwards, which is the saying of Kaddish and Baruch Hu, which are zechuyot that one does on behalf of the mate. A person does something that is a mitzvah and a Kiddush Hashem in order both to be matzdik alav adin, but also to change their behavior in a certain way. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that a person can take on a mitzvah. A person should do something like a mate. It doesn't have to be Kaddish, it doesn't have to be Baruch Hu that they say afterwards, but also something, a mitzvah. A person should make a change in their life in the zechut of the mate. And that's really how the mate has an impact on them. A real impact on the individual is now that it's changed their life. Their life is not the same life it was before, after they walk away from the Avelut, because now they've taken on a new practice or a new way to be, and that's b'schut ha-mate that they do that. And so that's an aspect of the Avelut, which is also important, not just the aspect of the mourning and the cathartic experience of leaving from the mate back to normal life, but it's also taking something with you. And how do you take something with you? Is that you change your life. It makes an impact on your life. A permanent impact, not just a passing impact on your life. Okay, we'll stop over here.